Hello and welcome to the Mejlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Panier, host of the Mejlis and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. Central Asia's trade with Europe has been severely hampered by Russia's war on Ukraine and subsequent sanctions the European Union imposed on Russia for the war. Much of Central Asia's trade with Europe and with Turkey passed through Russia, a legacy of the Soviet era when all roads west from Central Asia went through Russia. But now Central Asia is exploring new routes west that avoid Russian territory and go across the Caspian Sea and through the Caucasus. What are the options for Central Asia? What infrastructure is in place to reorient trade westward? And what still needs to be done to open these trade routes to Turkey and Europe? To discuss all this, I am joined by Valijan Turakulov, who is a PhD assistant professor at the Business School, Akfa University, Tashkent. He earned his PhD in international trade at Inha University, South Korea. His research interest is Central Asian countries' regional and trade policies. Yunus Sharifli is a research intern at the Central Asian Barometer. He also works as a junior research fellow at the Caucasian Center for International Relations and Strategic Studies at the Topchubasha Center in Azerbaijan. Thank you for joining me today. And Valijan, I'd like to start with you. For the benefit of our audience, can you give us an idea of how Central Asia's trade with Europe has been affected by the loss of trade routes through Russia?
If you look at a little bit about history of the Central Asia, is, you know, like Central Asia was the part of the and the center of the, you know, Silk Road before then, you know, like in Portuguese, you know, some of the, you know, like traders, they found a maritime route, and then Central Asia kind of lost, you know, like it is, you know, the importance in the, you know, like a Silk Road. And after that, you know, like after several years, the Russia came in, you know, like to the Central Asia. And then, you know, like even though we got a independence as an independent country, we still are really, we still depend on, you know, Russian corridor, okay, in order to, you know, trade with European Union. Even not only European Union, even some of the like Eastern countries, for example, like Japan, you know, like I know like some of the, you know, exporters from my country, they trade, you know, like through Kazakhstan and then Russia and then Vladivostok, you know, that part, you know, like so far, they've just bypassed the China and asked them why, because of the, you know, like some of the obstacles in China, even like, for example, the language obstacles, because like still traditionally, historically, we are close to the mainland Russian. They still prefer going through the Russia to the any other country. Okay. And then the Europe was, you know, like one of the, you know, the regions that we usually go through Turkey or the, even the Russia to the Europe. And then kind of we were happy. Let's say, for example, as you know, like Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan among Central Asian countries are enjoying, you know, GSP plus of the European Union. Kind of you're enjoying, we were about to enjoy from this preferences. However, you know, like, you know, the Russia made very kind of sharp turn, in this policy. And then, you know, like because of the Russia invaded Ukraine, now, you know, like we are even losing the transport corridor through the Russia. That's why I think this, discussion will be very useful for all of us and also like for our listeners, because it's a very hot topic that we have to discuss, because it's the, you know, like that, that today's discussed, you know, the topic that really impacts on the future of the Central Asian trade policy, as, you know, like this middle corridor success, kind of literally the success of the trade between, you know, the Central Asia and the to the Europe. So that is my introduction.
Okay, that's great. You know, and Yunus, I want to bring, you know, give you a chance to talk about the same thing. You know, not only how much of an impact this has been on Central Asia's trade with Europe, but can you give me also a little bit of idea, an idea about what infrastructure is in place? You know, what have they got for roads and railways? And we'll get to the China, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan railway in a minute, because I know that that's something you just wrote an excellent article on that. But can you give us an idea of what the infrastructure looks like in Central Asia that doesn't go through Russia? You know, is it, what are the other options if they don't want to go through Russia?
Okay, actually, I would like to say that not even after the Russia-Ukraine war, but before the Russia-Ukraine war, especially since the 1990s, when the Central Asian countries announced their independence, the Central Asian countries started to construct both hard infrastructure and the soft infrastructure. The meaning of the hard infrastructure is that building the railway, terminal, port, and dry ports. And also meaning of the soft infrastructure is about the digitalization of the customs, the facilitating of the control with, for example, the border, for example, in the China-Kazakh border, and also simplifying the rules, unification of the tariffs, and other things. In the generally, after the Russia-Ukraine war, we saw that Central Asian countries, especially the Kazakhstan, I would like to emphasize that Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan is the main player in the Central Asian countries because they try to diversify the routes, invest the railway infrastructure, try to increase their capacity in both dry ports and the port, especially Kazakhstan, and they try to attract more cargo from the northern route, which goes through the Russia, from to northern corridor to middle corridor, which start from the China, goes through Kazakhstan, and goes through the South Caucasus via Caspian Sea, and reach Turkey. In terms of the infrastructure, we saw that actually, I would like to first start with the Kazakhstan. Since 2000, Kazakhstan improved its railway infrastructure and modernized generally throughout the country of the railway infrastructure, also cooperate with the regional countries, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, and Kyrgyzstan, also cooperate with the South Caucasian countries for enhanced multimodal transportation. In the context of this topic, the middle corridor, especially the first, the middle corridor is important. The middle corridor is a transport route connecting China and Western Europe that chart a passage between the Russia in the north and Iran in the south. The routes at the moment is especially important because when we check the news since the Russia-Ukraine war began, we saw that the middle corridor seems one of the potential routes which can offset the losses, offset the losses of companies due to the Russia-Ukraine war, because at the moment, due to the ethical values and because of the sanctions on Russia, both European companies and Chinese companies try to diversify the routes and try to find another route which bypasses Russia. In this context, middle corridor is important, and Kazakhstan is especially important. And Kazakhstan at the moment try to invest China-Kazakh border. For example, we have the interesting developments in the China-Kazakh border. For example, announcement of the second multifunctional station in the DOSK terminal, which increased the capacity of the China-Kazakh border and facilitate the much better transportation from China to Europe. Second improvement is about the creation and building of the third terminal between the China-Kazakh border, and also import increasing capacity, and announcement of the new information about the simplifying the custom rules and reduced general the cost, the controlling process. The old developments said us that the Kazakhstan and also other regional countries try to improve multimodal transportation through the from China to Europe, try to increase their strategic importance, and try to get more cargo, because the more cargo means that more transit fee, and also the locate in the throughout the supply chain from China to Europe. In addition to the Kazakhstan, I would like to emphasize that Uzbekistan's initiative. For example, we saw that last month, the Uzbekistan proposed new corridor, which starts from the China and goes through the Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan. One branch goes through the Iran, one branch goes through the South Caucasus via Caspian Sea. This is the important development, so like the regional competition between Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan in terms of attracting more cargo. And we saw that at the moment, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, and China announced that the construction date of the China, Kyrgyzstan, and Uzbekistan railway is extremely important for the multimodal transportation. Generally, I can say that at the moment there are a lot of advantages in terms of the middle corridor and also in terms of the corridor which goes through the Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan. But there are also some problems. For example, the congestion problem, China-Kazakh border, generally the decisions about that China-Kyrgyzstan railway still need to more accurate information, because we know that last 20 years that Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan talks about the realization of this project, but there are a lot of delays. But in the finally, I can say that maybe in the media we saw a lot of information that middle corridor seems a potential alternative to the Russian route, but actually in the short term or and medium term, we can say that the middle corridor has a potential to offset the international companies' losses from the Russian corridor. But middle corridor countries or the new route from the Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan can't replace total the northern corridor, which goes through the Russia. But in the future, For example, Turkish officials specially argue that there is a possibility that 30% of the cargo, which goes through from the Russian territory, there's a possibility that 30% of the cargo draw to Middle Corridor and for example, the route goes through the Kyrgyzstan-Uzbekistan and generally reduce the reliance on Russia.
Excellent. Thank you. Wow, that was a real complete explanation of that. Valijon, I want to come back to you for a second here too. And we'll get to you in a second also, Yunus, because it's the same question. You know, twice this month, I've seen reports about the Uzbek president speaking with the Azerbaijani president. And we know that Kazakh President Tokayev was in Azerbaijan on August 24th to meet with Ilham Aliyev. Also, can you talk a little bit about the warming relations between Uzbekistan and Azerbaijan, and more generally about the warming relations between Central Asia and Azerbaijan as they see this potential opening of our new route west, which obviously involves Azerbaijan. It's a very important link then on that.
Thank you very much for this question. We saw that the last 2 months, actually last 3 months, that generally there is a development between relation. Generally, there is a development between Azerbaijan-Kazakhstan, relation of the Azerbaijan-Kazakhstan and Azerbaijan-Uzbekistan. We saw that when the president Shavkat Mirziyoyev visited Azerbaijan, we saw that there are also new agreements in the context of the logistic cooperation. Generally, also after Mr. Shavkat Mirziyoyev left the country, there's also an interaction between the business sectors and the economic sectors, and they try to propose new economic corridor or new transportation corridor from China to Europe. As I noted before, at the moment, Uzbekistan try to also play important role in the context of the China-European Union railway trade. And in this context, we saw that, for example, we have a news that Uzbekistan, Azerbaijan, and Turkey signed new agreement to simplify the custom rules, and they signed Dashkent Accord. Is extremely important in this context because they emphasize that every time the multimodal transportation from the China to Europe. Generally, the main reason of that, the development of the Azerbaijan-Uzbekistan relationship is also due to the Russia-Ukraine war, because both states see that there are opportunities to attract more cargo, attract more international companies, also modernize their infrastructure, because I would like to say that in comparison with the past years, we see that generally improvement of the infrastructure, not just in the Central Asia, but Sub-Caucasus, the main player is the state. For example, Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan or Uzbekistan. But at the moment, due to the Russia-Ukraine war, both Chinese and European companies, also both private and state-led companies, try to invest the middle corridor or the corridor which starts from the China goes through Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan. And third player, in addition to the state and international companies, the third actors we saw that involved the improvement of the infrastructure in Central Asia and Sub-Caucasus is the financial international organizations or regional organizations, we can say that. For example, Asia Development Bank. Asia Development Bank involving of the modernization of both Kazakhstan, infrastructure and Uzbekistan, and also Azerbaijan and Georgia. And recently, European Bank for Reconstruction and Development announced that it invests Kazakhstan railway bond for improved efficiency, reduce cost, reduce the time consuming, improve the both port of the Kazakhstan and the railway infrastructure. In this context, we said that one of the most important reason of the recent interaction between the Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan and Uzbekistan, is about to use the opportunity, attract more cargo, try to attract more investment from the international companies and international organization, and play strategically important role, not for the Sub-Caucasus and Central Asia, but generally between the China and the European Union.
No, this is excellent, and thank you, because we're going to do a lot in the second part of the show about the international efforts to try to improve the line. This next, actually, Yunus, you can comment on that too, about the connection to Azerbaijan. But what I also want to talk about here too is that we're talking about a Trans-Caspian, at some point of this trade route, you have to go across the Caspian Sea. Now, we know that the ports have been developed on both sides of the Caspian Sea. You've got Kurik, you got Aktau, you got Turkmenbashi City, and on the other side, we got Alat. Is that sufficient? I mean, you know, is the capacity of these ports sufficient? And especially on the Azerbaijani side, can they handle all the traffic coming to and going from Central Asia?
Thank you very much for again question. Actually, it's a really important question because we saw that, as I noted before, there's some advantage of the middle corridor or general the route which starts from the Central Asia and goes through the Sofkalx, but there is also some congestion problems. For example, one of the most important problems, the port capacity, not in the Azerbaijan, but also the capacity of the Kazakhstan ports and the Turkmenistan ports. But we saw that both Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, and Turkmenistan, they try to invest and increase the capacity. We recently saw that there's an announcement of a new data that already both Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan reach maximum capacity. This is important news because this means that in future there is a possibility the creation of the bottlenecks and the congestion problems. The second problem is in this context is the shortage of the ferry and the shortage of the vessel which play key role for sending cargo, for example, from Kazakhstan port to Azerbaijan port or from Turkmenistan port to Azerbaijan port. But in this, the both example is important and we saw that. For example, recently, Azerbaijan President Mr. Ilham Aliyev announced that we need to start construction of the second stage of the Baku International Trade Port. There are also great capacity to attract more cargo and increase the efficiency of transportation through Azerbaijan. And we saw that in the Kazakhstan side that they also announced that they want to create container hub in the Aktau port. And also they have a plan to build 10 vessels for cargo transportation from one side of the Caspian Sea to the other side. And also Azerbaijan side decided to build more vessels, not just for the Caspian Sea, but for also the Black Sea. This is important because we saw that both Kazakhstan and Azerbaijan tried to invest not just their country, but also try to invest and improve efficiency through the Middle Corridor in Georgia, in the Turkey, in the Black Sea. And at the moment, I can say that there is a bottleneck problem. And also both countries, not just Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan, but Turkmenistan ports reach their maximum capacity. But there are still the playing field that after a while, when they start to the construction and when they finish the new terminals in the both the Aktau port, Kurk port, or Baku International Trade Port, or Tushmanbashi port, there is a great opportunity and great capacity to handle more cargo from China to Europe.
Great. Thank you very much. And Balijan, I'm going to come back to you for a minute, too, because I know Uzbekistan has been paying a lot of attention to their ability to ship goods and or accept goods to both the Kazakhstani ports and to the port at Turkmenbashi also. Isn't this true? Can you tell us a little bit about Uzbekistan's efforts to get to these ports?
When the president, Shavkat Mirziyoyev, came in 2016, he kind of started making a lot of efforts, you know, like to have a corridors to the south, east, you know, the countries or the European countries or the China or the, Japan and the Korea, those regions. And one of the efforts he made it, like, there was two dilemmas in front of the Uzbek government at the time, like whether they want to have a corridor through the Afghanistan, Pakistan or the Turkmenistan to the Iran. You know, like, as you know, like they ended up having a port, you know, like kind of a corridor through the Afghanistan and also like the Pakistan. And the reason why they did not choose the closest, you know, Bandar Abbas, you know, the port, which is located in Iran, is it has two reasons. The one of the reason is that, you know, like Iran still, you know, like has a lot of, you know, sanctions from the West. That's why the government did not want to have any risk, current risk, and also future risk. And also, like, when I talked to some of the government officials, they were also saying that, you know, like, the Turkmenistan is a kind of a country, you know, like, they can, you know, like, change their position anytime. That's why they did not want to make any risk of this, you know, multi-million, you know, the projects. Even though the Afghanistan is a war, they still chose that one. And then now they're, you know, like, working on this. Even, you know, like you talked about the, you know, Azerbaijan relationship with the Uzbekistan. Actually, like, you know, Uzbekistan now, like, trying to have very good relationship with all of the Turkish-speaking countries, especially Turkey, Azerbaijan, and in other Central Asian countries. And then three weeks ago, you know, there was a meeting between ministers of Uzbekistan, Turkey, and also Azerbaijan. And they made a lot of, you know, relationship. They made a lot of agreements among them. And also one of the, you know, the thing that really goes to our topic is that the Uzbekistan government offered kind of Turkey, Caucasus, Central Asia, South Asia via Afghanistan, you know, like corridor. in order to, you know, like going from the Azerbaijan, from the Turkey to the Europe to the south, you know, the east countries, like at Indian Ocean.
Okay, great. Okay, we're going to pause here for a second. We're going to bring Sherzad in, and we'll start the second half of the show. This is the Mijlis podcast, and we are talking about the options to replace Central Asia's trade routes through Russia. And I am joined by Sherzad Eraliyev, a postdoctoral researcher at Lund University, Sweden, and the University of Helsinki, Finland. He's published on migration in Russia and Turkey, state and society relations in Central Asia. He's the co-author of the newly published book, The Political Economy of Non-Western Migration Regimes, Central Asia Migrant Workers in Russia and Turkey. We also have Valijan Turakulov, PhD, assistant professor at business school, Akfa University, Tashkent. He earned his PhD in international trade at Inha University, South Korea, and his research interest is Central Asian countries' regional and trade policies and Yunus Sharifli. He's a research intern at Central Asian Barometer. He also works as a junior research fellow at the Caucasian Center for International Relations and Strategic Studies at the Topchubashev Center in Azerbaijan. Thank you all for being here. I'm Bruce Pannier, the host of the show. And let's talk about this. And we've been discussing some of the hardware. I think that was Yunus used that term earlier, that to get these trade route, what's in place right at the moment to try to move goods across Central Asia. Sherzad, since you just got here, I'm kind of curious about what we've talked a little bit about what's in place. But if they're going to replace the northern route, if they're going to try to bypass Russia and have the same kind of trade volumes that they have through the northern route, what still needs to be done in Central Asia to accomplish this?
Are you asking from the Central Asian perspective, or are you asking about the global players who have interest in this project?
Let's start with the Central Asian governments themselves, and then we'll move to the global, and then you can comment on the global players right after that, okay?
All right. I think from the Central Asian perspective, the first and foremost thing is the build-up of the development of the infrastructure. What I don't know how much you have discussed this issue before I joined the show, but I think even with Kazakhstan now speedily building up and then expanding its two seaports on the Caspian Shore and building up its railway infrastructure inside on its territory, we still need there more should be done in terms of building and expanding this kind of infrastructure. So the first thing is investments in infrastructure. That's from Central Asian perspective. And if you're asking about what other global players those stakeholders who are interested in the development of projects, I think it's obvious that they need to invest a lot of money in building those ports and expanding those ports, starting with Kazakhstan or also at the same time Turkmenistan's shore of the Caspian Sea, and of course we have Azerbaijan, and of course on the western part, I think those available ports of Poti and Batumi of Georgia are not enough to serve large amounts of transport, large amounts of freight if you need to expand this project.
No, this is great, and we'll get to I certainly want to get to Anaklia here in just a moment. Valijan, you have your hand up. You wanted to make a comment?
Yeah, I just want to emphasize on the thing that, like Central Asian countries are kind of overlooking. So, as previously just Mr. Yunus Sharifli, mentioned about hard and soft infrastructure. And to my best knowledge, so far, what the Central Asian countries are focusing on is that they're focusing on more hard infrastructure. For example, like building up roads, okay? And then, something tangible, but they're kind of, ignoring, but not focusing on the social infrastructure, which also plays very important role to, for the goods, to go through the corridor smoothly. For example, infrastructure can be, the custom union, non-tariff barriers or the transaction fees, all of them. So, for example, one of the kind of, corner partner of the project, which is Uzbekistan, is not yet, you know, like part of the WTO. Or like we can just say that, you know, there is no a harmonization kind of a system that lets the goods, you know, like go smoothly in the, you know, across the corridor. That's why I just want to emphasize that, you know, like when we talk and also when they are doing their project, they should not only focus on, you know, hard infrastructure, building something tangible, but also like making everything, you know, like smooth across the project. They also have to focus on the soft infrastructure. So that is what I want to.
No, that's great. And thank you, because this will be the next topic. You know, and I did want to mention that a lot of the hard infrastructure, and thank you, Eunice, again, for bringing that up, because these are great terms for us to use. You know, a lot of this is the Asian Development Bank's Central Asian Regional Economic Cooperation Project that started in 2001. You know, there's six corridors through there. Of course, we got the Belt and Road Initiative. That's played a big role in opening up some and the construction of some of these routes at the same time. But we have a good point here about the harmonization of rules and regulations, tariffs, things like that. I mean, this is also a huge obstacle to smooth trade. Shehrzad, I'm going to bring you back in since you know, to give you some equal time here, since we had some technical problems bringing you in the first half of the show. I mean, just how much of a problem is that? You know, we've heard that the government still don't have, in Central Asia, still don't have, haven't worked that out yet. You know, how is that going to work out? What happens when goods get to one of their, to the border of Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan or Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan or something? I mean, how much is left to do with that?
Well, I think Valajan has already, I mean, he mentioned the very important factor, this soft infrastructure. And since I'm not an expert on these trade issues, I think maybe Valajan will be more qualified to answer what is really going on this matter.
Okay, Valajan, if you want to add something to that, and then I'll ask you, Eunice, to comment on it also.
Actually, you know, like it was my PhD topic to learn the hard infrastructure and soft infrastructure of the Central Asian countries. You know what I call is that, you know, usually hard infrastructure is something, you know, like nature made, and then soft infrastructure is kind of handmade, you know, because like, you know, we are landlocked countries, and, you know, kind of luckily, you know, Uzbekistan is double landlocked country. So, yeah, that is a nature made that, I mean, we cannot avoid, but at least we can kind of ease some of the soft infrastructure, you know, like reducing the tariffs, you know, like removing, eliminating some of the non-tariff barriers, you know, the license, certificates, these kind of things. And then we can kind of reduce the soft infrastructure to make the trade more smooth. But, you know, like this is not what's going on actually nowadays, except let's say the Kazakhstan, but also many, in, you know, Central Asian countries, especially in Uzbekistan. What we're focusing on is that still we are focusing on, you know, hard infrastructure too much. And then we are kind of partially focusing on the soft infrastructure. That's why, you know, like, you know, I read some of the researches about the middle corridor, that it would be great to be like much kind of, you know, like faster corridor if, you know, the countries which are the part of the middle corridor have kind of trade agreement, kind of mutual trade agreement with each other. So that is the one of the solution, or at least they should not only work on the, that, you know, building the bridge or the roads or those kind of things, but also they have to start building a kind of harmonized a system that, you know, the goods goes smoothly. However, like to my best knowledge and, you know, to my previous, you know, the researches, there are not a lot of things are going on in terms of the soft infrastructure.
I would like to add something about the soft infrastructure. First, I would like to say that why soft infrastructure is important and why if it's not improved that and how it's created new problems. I would like to emphasize again the clear example. For example, in the China-Kazakh border, we said that there are some problem in the January, and this problem is directly related to the soft infrastructure problem. But soft infrastructure problem, for example, inefficient border control. Inefficient border control is related to the non-transparent the control, and this increased the informal cost of the cargos and also formal cost of the cargos, increase the time consuming and create a lot of challenges and problems for the international companies, because we know that the supply chain logic is work in the context of the just in time principle. If this principle not work, we saw that private companies or the state-led companies started to try to find another route, because they need to acute time. They need to know that when a cargo reach destination, they need to accurate and calculate that arrival time of the cargo to China or the Europe. European destination. In this context, after the Russia-Ukrainian war, we saw that actually I agree totally with that, Valijon. Yes, the Central Asian countries and the South Caucasian countries in the past mostly pay attention to hard infrastructure. But after the Russia-Ukrainian war, we have a clear example that for example, Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan, Turkey, and Georgia announced that they create a joint venture called the Eurasian Alliance. This is similar to cooperation between that Russia, Belarus, and Kazakhstan. This is important because they try to unify the tariffs, reduce the barriers, unifying tariffs and customs, and facilitating much efficient custom process and facilitating fast border controls. We have also another example. Just really, I think 1 week ago, we saw that Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, and Iran signed an agreement to reduce the cost of tariff. And also unifying the international trade regime. We also finally another example that Azerbaijan, Uzbekistan, and Turkey also announced that after the Dashkent Accord, they also want to create a system for simplifying the rules, facilitating the fast border controls, and also increase the transparency. We see that both in Central Asia and in South Caucasus and with the Turkey, they all try to, at the moment, not just try to develop hard infrastructure, but also they try to improve soft infrastructure, because we know that without the soft infrastructure, maybe we have a railway, but this railway is not enough. We need to calculate the time, reduce the cost, reduce the time, increase the transparency, and give the chance to companies to calculate when their cargo arrive and or reach destination. In this context, after the Russia-Ukraine war, we saw a lot of examples and a lot of agreement between the Central Asian and South Caucasian countries that they try to simplify the rules.
Now we get the question of who's going to pay for all this stuff, right? I mean, the Central Asian states certainly are being hit hard by what the economic situation that's been created from the Russia's war in Ukraine. You know, and China, in unison, your article that you wrote about the China-Kyrgyz-Uzbek railway, you mentioned that project, for example, is going to be more than $4 billion. And the Chinese don't feel that they should be responsible for paying that whole bill, meaning that the Kyrgyz and Uzbeks are going to have to come up with some of this money, too. I haven't seen the European Union states promising huge amounts of money for opening up this trade route. Turkey, of course, has its own financial problems at the moment, too. So you're going to need some money to open up these railways, these shipping routes, to get the roads all built. We talked about, mentioned Anaklia briefly. I mean, they started to build, it was supposed to be the biggest port in the Black Sea. But of course, they've certainly reduced their goals for that because they're running out of financing. I mean, how much money should the European Union, for instance, be willing to put into this and help finance? Who can help the Central Asians and Azerbaijan and Georgia to open up these routes? And I'll start with Shehrzad, please.
In answering your question, I think, well, it depends everything on, I think what I know already is the EU has increased its financial aid to Azerbaijan already. I think issue of financing has its implications between this on the topic of this Azerbaijan-Armenian relations and Azerbaijan's growing in importance. But I think part of the money also is supposed to cover the expenses of Azerbaijan building infrastructure that would help facilitate or improve the capacity of this middle corridor. I think the EU, at least for the last in 2021, the EU initially promised $150 million in financial aid, and which was later increased to $2 billion US dollars, I think. And that's not enough to build large infrastructure projects, but I think that's also incentivizing. And at the same time, we should also keep in mind that those transit countries, say Georgia, Azerbaijan, or Kazakhstan, they are the number one beneficiaries also. So it's in their interest to to seek for investment, to seek for money. And I'm not sure if China is absolutely unwilling to cover the expenses of the China-Kyrgyz-Uzbek railroad. I think at least they will be somehow also investing.
Okay, great. Thank you. Because I think that's only fair too. Well, John, you know, considering if we look at this as a middle corridor project, right? Now that presumes that this is a trade route between China and the European Union that just happens to run through the Caucasus and Central Asia at the same time. Now, if China and European Union are the big beneficiaries of this, then it would seem to make sense that China and the European Union would be willing to help finance this. To a huge degree, I would imagine, since they're going to get more out of this than anybody, probably. How do you feel about that?
I think so far we have seen a lot of projects like Belt and Road Initiative. For example, South Korean first female President Park Geun-hye, she also had a initiative, and then Moon Jae-in, she also had a Northern Policy Initiative, and then India. So like many countries, usually big countries, they have at least initiative to make a road. And then China's, Belt and Road Initiative was very realistic until the war and conflict started between Russia and Ukraine. And, when it comes to the final, who financed this project, if you look at this whole corridor, on one side, there is a China, which is a big factory. And then in the other side, we will see a big market, which is Europe. And then in the middle, some of the kind of relatively, smaller countries. That's why I believe this two giant factory in a market, they should have some investment in this project so that, the countries, which I say, the Central Asian countries should get benefit from it. And also it should be kind of, from Central Asian countries' perspective, should be kind of, opening up their market and also improving their soft infrastructure. They should kind of promise to the China and then the European Union to make a kind of to pay back off their generosity. So I believe those two giant, China and Europe, they should invest in this project. That this is my, the thinkings, to my own research.
Okay, thank you, Wally John. Okay, and Eunice, we're going to come to you. And I'm remembering a moment in late August 2018 after they had signed the Caspian Convention, and Azerbaijani President Ilham Aliyev was meeting with then German Chancellor Angela Merkel, and they were talking about the possibility of doing a trans-Caspian natural gas pipeline. And Aliyev said if Turkmenistan was serious about it, then they should have to put up some of their money, like Azerbaijan had done to do the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan oil pipeline and the Baku-Tbilisi-Izerum natural gas pipeline. Is it fair to ask the countries in Central Asia and the Caucasus to put up money too, or should the burden fall on the two endpoints of this route, meaning the European Union and China?
Actually, I would like to say that since 1990s, Azerbaijan, as I noted, by not just try to improve the railway infrastructure or generally the port infrastructure in the Azerbaijan, but also try to create the regional transit stop, for example, between the Azerbaijan and Georgia. They invest also Georgian railway infrastructure. We can saw this in the Baku-Tbilisi-Kars railway, as you know, so people also in energy trade. And at the moment, if you consider that, there's a financing problem. Actually, the financing problem is that maybe before the talk about the financing problem, we need to talk, for example, how the countries really want to realize the project. If we talk about the energy trade or energy cooperation between Azerbaijan and Turkmenistan, or if we talk about that general transportation cooperation between Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan, Uzbekistan, we saw that at the moment there are both Central Asian side and South Caucasian side interested into develop both energy cooperation and also transportation cooperation in logistical cooperation. This is extremely important. In this context, we said that, for example, if we analyzed Kazakhstan and Azerbaijan, we saw that they tried to improve their infrastructure with their own money, their own budget, by the way of the public-private partnership. especially Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan. And Uzbekistan recently also the converted strategy and adapt this the reality. If we consider that, we can say that, yes, Azerbaijan has again chance to help the Central Asian countries, for example, in Turkmenistan, to improve to energy cooperation or invest in energy infrastructure and also the logistical, for example, railway infrastructure or the port infrastructure. But we can say that just Azerbaijan's effort is not enough because at the moment, as I noted before, we have the international companies, for example, the European the cargo companies, European railway companies, such as the Norwegian Logistics, the rail cargo, top the rail cargo and other companies. They not just try to involve in the middle corridors or they not just try to involve the Central Asian routes, but they also emphasize that we need to invest and improve the corridor efficiency. In addition to companies, as I noted before, Asia Development Bank, European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, and also some banks and agency, for example, the United States Agency for International Development announced that they want to invest the middle corridor, general debt, the multimodal transportation in the Central Asia. If we compare with the past, we know that the three actors, state, companies, and international and regional organizations try to invest and improve the whole multimodal transportation to Central Asia and the South Caucasus.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, and I want to thank all three of you, too. Unfortunately, we are out of time. We try to keep this podcast is certainly under an hour and better if it's 50 minutes or 45 minutes. So I do want to thank you once again. So Yunus Sharipli, a research intern at Central Asian Barometer, Sherzad Aliyev, postdoctoral researcher at Lund University in Sweden, and Valijan Torakula, PhD assistant professor at Business School Akpa University in Tashkent. Big thank you to my producer in Washington, Nathan Shoemaker, our Mejlis podcast producer. And a reminder that you can subscribe to the Mejlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting RFARL's website at rfarl.org. Thank you very much, and we'll be back next week.